You are listening to episode 145 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast, Founding Our Father's Freedom with Fireworks.
Welcome to episode 145 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Today is July the 6th, 2014. I'm Matthew Dean Furlough, and this is my freedom-loving brother, James Furlough.
I went camping this weekend, and there was this guy near us. It was about every hour, you would just hear in the background, USA! How is it? He was shouting it every hour. He took a break at night, but like we're talking like after midnight, he stopped shouting, USA! It's like, alright, cool.
Hey man, proud to be. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, did you do anything fun?
Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness, James. Oh my goodness. I went up to Tahoe for the weekend.
Okay.
We drove up, took a half day on Thursday, drove up, sat in 14 hours of traffic round trip.
Lucky you.
For those of you, I know. It's normally like a 3-hour journey. 3.5 if you stop to go get some food. This is traffic was a bit of a nightmare, but just was up there with some we were up there with some really great people and just having a great time. And I was wearing a ridiculous American flag, the American flag shirt that I wore in England last year, and I pretty much
that was a year ago, wasn't it? Man,
yeah,
I know, time flies,
but yeah, it was crazy, but it was fun. It's fun.
So did you see any fireworks?
Yeah, actually, we had this really cool moment where in Tahoe they have a number of fireworks shows, but they're all on other shores. We were on the west shore, and so there was like some on the Nevada side. There's some on North Shore. They're all over the place. So we went out to this private pier that was that's part of this property that we were on, and it's like owned between like five houses, and we were like went out on this like, so we're pretty much all alone. A couple more of these families from around there kind of came down, and we got to see these fireworks go off in the distance, and they're like these tiny little things. And then another show starts, so there's like three shows going on at the same time, like different shorts, and then all of a sudden the big one that starts going into the finale, and then another one starts going into the finale, and another finale. And I turned to our cousin Timmy and I said, dude, we got to do it now. And he goes, we got to do what now? And it's like, the national anthem. And he goes, oh, okay, get it started. So I'm just like, you know, oh, stay can. You know, I just start like, not bellowing, just loud enough for my group to hear me. Within two words, like three or four of our friends start joining in. And there's like 20 of us there. And so it's just like, all of a sudden, like everybody's like singing louder. The rest of the pier starts to pick up. And like soon, like the whole pier is like yelling it. And like as you're kind of coming into the crescendo of the whole thing, all of a sudden I realize I'm listening, like the whole West Shore, like everybody's come out to their houses, everybody's on their benches watching these shows, so they're all singing along with it. Oh my goodness, I felt like it's awesome. I love being like when you know it's like the moment's right. It's like that the guy who gets to start the clap at the end of the movie, you know, just being that guy. Like I could sense it, and I triggered it. It was
you
great.
Seized it. Nice. Nice. Yeah. Very cool.
Yeah, it was really good. It was really good.
My firework experience was slightly different. We were out on the beach on the coast with some friends who we went camping with, and there were a ton of illegal fireworks out there.
Oh, man.
Which made it awesome. Yeah, so we showed up, and the camp ranger was like, you want to go to this particular town and beach and watch the fireworks there. And they're like, they got a big show. What he didn't say is that, yes, there is a big show, but it's nonstop fireworks. We get out there. Oh, 5,000 people sounds like too many people on this beach.
Wow.
But I mean, we're talking, it's at least 2,000. And,
we
pick a section of the beach where it's slightly less crowded. But you can see the distance where you're just like, it looks mosh pit-esque, where you're like, oh my gosh. And so we get out there, and I mean, and we're walking up, and we're like, has the show started already? Like, there's fireworks going off. I don't understand. Yeah, no. Everybody had fireworks there. We were like the weirdos who didn't. We were there to watch a show. And so we're sitting there. And behind us is this – it's a Spanish-speaking family, which I'm kind of like, you know, that's cool. That's what being freedom's about, you know. And they got like their kids are doing sparklers right behind us, which was fantastic. And but then all around us, we had people who were shooting up fireworks. And I mean like not your little tiny fireworks. We're talking the big
like real,
booms.
Like actual mortars.
Yes. Like you – and you and they're sitting there. And with this one guy – he was, oh my gosh, maybe 30 or 40 feet away from us, but we were downwind of him. And so he'd shoot them up, and they would literally explode above our heads. And
awesome.
And I mean, and you look at it and go, whoa, that's awesome. And then there were some college kids who were another, you know, down near the ocean, another 40 feet from us, who were shooting stuff off. But at any given moment, there were at least 10 fireworks going off. And
wow.
and there was this one section where we looked at it and we were like, oh, and then the actual official show started, and you could kind of tell because these ones were, they were even bigger, you know, like
yeah.
they sound like a cannon going off, you know, those types, and you're like, okay,
yeah.
you know, that's the real thing, and they were all kind of in one space and spaced well, but it was crazy because you'd watch this one big show, but then underneath were all these other fireworks and like these
that's
individuals
awesome.
Trying to compete with the main show, and. And at one time we were like, was that the finale? Nope, still going, apparently. All right, cool. We were out there for like an hour and a half, and finally we're like, I'm tired. It's 11:30. I need to go to bed. And there were still crazy fireworks going off. And we were like, wow, this is wild. It was insane, the number
oh,
of fireworks.
Man.
And the people who were with are very they're cost conscious. You could
yeah.
be like hanging out with them. And they're just like... Do you know how much money is just being blown up on this beach right now? Like this is
not enough.
Incredible. Oh yeah, it was crazy. And then at one time something did happen where it seemed like a finale and then people started hooping and hollering and cheering and it sounded like a stadium of just people going nuts. Like, wow. It was pretty cool. It was a cool experience.
I've actually started doing research. There's a group that they make fireworks and like the for fireworks shows, like
yeah.
they make the 12-inch mortar shells, the you know, the big ones, and I'm actually hoping that this year I'll be able to start going there and learn how to make fireworks and start actually making fireworks because those guys are cost conscious too, as they make them themselves, so they're super cheap, and they're amazing, but
yeah.
it's cool. But you know what, James? Guess what? We are not here to talk about 4th of July fireworks. Believe it or not, this week, like every week, we'll be talking about freedom, technology, and the continuing corporate opera.
Nice.
Or the soap opera, you're welcome, of corporations, dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and of course, the technology they're developing. But before we get into the heart of the show, James has got a short disclosure he wants to throw on our way.
Yes, I had a short week, but during that short week, I worked for HP. But during this podcast,
man.
I do not represent HP or any of HP's opinions.
That is bueno to know. If you want to follow us throughout the weeks and whatnot, see all sorts of cool pictures. I got all sorts of crazy pictures up on the Instagram and tweeting stuff and being interesting. You can follow us there on Instagram. I am NextWiggin4. On the Twitter, I'm at Matthew D. Furlow.
I am at James Furlow on Twitter and jamesfurlow.com everywhere else.
If you want to find out more about the show, go to furlowbros.com. We have all sorts of clicks and links there, all the articles we talk about this week. Probably not any fireworks shows. If you want to see that, Google it. Ours is going to be more tech-centric. but yeah, so that's our dealio.
So I read some personal big news this week.
Yeah.
You ever watched Community?
yes. Yes, I've watched Community. On my phone I have a shortcut autocorrect that I type in CCC and it automatically corrects it to cool with commas and everything.
Nice. Nice. That's good. Cool. Cool, cool. So that show, they just finished their fifth season, and it, to me, kind of left it on a semi-cliffhanger, but apparently they were done. And yeah, it turns out not anymore.
I think it's fair to say that NBC was done.
Yes.
I'm not sure if Community was done.
they definitely left it. Well, it definitely had the feeling of being done at the end of season four.
Yeah.
And then it was kind of like, and now we're back for season five. Okay. Jeff Winger's a teacher. Spoiler alert. But, you know, so it was there. John Oliver started to play a bigger role yet again. and who's hilarious.
Yeah.
Some noted people were gone of that, like Danny Glover and... oh my gosh, I'm calling him Pierce Hawthorne. That's totally not his real name.
The old guy. Which one?
Chevy Chase. Thank you.
Yeah, Pierce Hawthorne. That's not the right name.
Yeah. Yeah. So he wasn't there anymore. And so, anyways, so they were supposed to be done, but Sony has done a last-minute deal where they're coming back. But here's the interesting part about all of this for season six and maybe beyond. It's not with Hulu. It's not with Netflix. It's not with another broadcaster that you would expect, or HBO. It's with Yahoo.
Yeah. Yahoo! Six seasons in a movie. They haven't announced the movie yet, but I'm... fingers crossed.
They said that it's a possibility. And I liked Joel McHale, who is the main character dude. You know, he quotes Mark Twain and says, "The reports of our cancellation have been greatly exaggerated." And he says, "Six season and a movie is real. Thank you, Sony. Thank you, Yahoo. Thank you, Dan Harmon, who's the creator. And thank you to the greatest effing fans in the history of the human race. It's the internet, so we can swear now."
That's funny. Oh man, Joe, they it's such a great team. They're all so freaking funny. But this is super interesting. Yahoo's getting, because the big thing to, obviously it's fun to talk about the show Community and to throw out quotes and everything. For those of you who don't know, Six Seasons a Movie is a bit of an inside joke about shows that should be canceled or are going to get canceled. And some characters will tell them they're going to get canceled, and then the fans of the shows will respond with six seasons in a movie as they run away. And so that's been for a show that's always.
I didn't know that. Nice.
Yeah, that's where that comes from. It's actually an even like it came from. They're all about like what are those things? TV tropes. And that was like a TV trope thing that started, and so it's just that's why they can't why they keep yelling six seasons in a movie with everything.
Funny.
It was with the cape was the character where they first started doing that, where he'd run around with the cape and he'd whip things and just knock like sodas over everywhere. They're gonna cancel the show, six seasons in a movie. Anyways, so but it's as fun as it is to relive Community. The big deal here is that Yahoo's getting into the content creation game, which is something that, it's funny. A year ago, we were talking about how, man, it would make so much sense for somebody like Apple to buy a studio or to buy a broadcast. They got enough money, and then they could be doing this. And I think we all kind of thought that, I think everybody's thought it was obvious that this should be happening at to some degree, that these tech companies should be getting into the content creation. Obviously, Netflix was the first one to kind of go out on a limb there, but it was a natural extension for them. But I'm glad to see that you're seeing companies like Yahoo say, hey, you know what? We do other content type stuff. We do news. We do all, you know, we do entertainment. Why not include this in the portfolio of what we can do? And I think you're going to see more and more companies getting on that bandwagon because – you know, if it was obvious to us, it's probably obvious to everybody else too. So I don't know. It's cool.
Yeah,
very exciting.
It's cool. Yeah, it's interesting. I'm excited for Yahoo. We'll see how that goes.
Yeah, definitely. And we'll see how much they swear.
Yeah,
what's one of the interesting things that I think is, like, most shows, even if they could swear, they won't swear. It's actually a rather small minority that needs the regulation. You know, but whatever. So, to change topics at a breakneck speed, NASA has kind of made a big deal announcement this weekend. They have given the go-ahead for development of a deep space payload rocket delivery system.
Halode rocket. What is you said payload or halode?
Payload. Payload.
Oh, okay.
So basically what this is
I have a fan behind me, so it's...
What?
I have a fan behind me, so I really got to focus.
Yeah, seriously. So the last time a major NASA vehicle passed mustard during one of these reviews was back in the 1970s, and it was none other than the Saturn V, which carried many astronauts to the moon. So when you're trying to think of, okay, what kind of rocket are we talking here? Saturn V scale thing. And basically, what these giant rockets are, like the Saturn V, are they're your biggest thrusters out there, and they're not designed for small payloads. They're designed for gigantic ships and moving huge amounts of stuff into space. By comparison to, because you're never moving huge things into space, but they're, this is going to be designed to really get a large object out there, some sort of a vehicle. They're hoping to, by the end of 2017, have a unmanned mission using the rockets. We'll send some satellite out there that'll go and do cool things.
Cool.
And then in the it'll hopefully be ferrying astronauts to big space rocks or even the red planet as soon as 2021. And this first round of spending is going to be $2.8 billion, and the agency plans to unlock $6.8 billion of its fund from fiscal year 2014 through 2018 for the project. So this is cool because I think a lot of people have been kind of feeling about NASA that it's important and we want them to be doing more as a society, and they don't need a lot of money, like compared to the defense budget and compared to a lot of other budgets out there. They get like pennies, and yet this is this is big. This is important for humanity to be doing this. So it's exciting to see them getting a big chunk of money to be able to send things deep space. And I think I know that the idea of manned missions to Mars gets a lot of attention. Maybe there's some real justifiable engineering thing behind that, but I think the reality of it is what this guy's going to be all about is mostly if we do send people to Mars, it'll be as a major marketing thing for NASA just to get more money rolling in. And if that works, hey, it works. But I think the exciting part about this is putting even bigger rockets, even bigger satellites into space that can travel even further and deeper than what we've been. Because, the big one is the moon Titan of Saturn. It's basically the size of a planet. It's a gigantic moon. But that one's pretty important because it's got liquid oceans on it, and there's actually stuff going on. If there's life present elsewhere in the solar system, it's almost certainly on Titan. And so I'm excited to see us getting a rocket big enough to actually send stuff to go and check it out and see what's happening. So it's exciting. As somebody who likes big fireworks.
Yeah. No, that's very exciting. That's cool.
Yeah.
I hope it happens.
The nice part is it is happening.
It
the question just will be like, what are they,
Well, I hope it works.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Let's avoid any big explosions. No real fireworks. But.
Yeah.
Hmm. All right, man.
Nice.
So do you want to go
I don't
first
know how to transition first? That was huge. Now let's talk small.
All right, go for it. Or is it me?
I'll let you give the background of it.
Okay, so this is cool. We're trying to get to the point where I'm actually. It's funny. I'm going to preface this with a little bit of self-realization. for some reason, as we've been doing this show, like, there are certain fields of tech that I'm just drawn to, right? Sometimes it has to do with what I work. Sometimes it's just different things that I'm interested in. Sometimes it's just stuff that I already understand, so I like seeing where it goes further. And then there are other areas of tech that I'm just, even though it's important and growing, I, for whatever reason, don't feel compelled to do much research in it. And I'll be totally honest, bio, like super advanced biotech, is one of those areas. And I think it kind of woogs me out a little bit, just to actually being body parts and stuff. But as somebody who is mature, I've realized that that's what's going on. And as a byproduct, I'm forcing myself to grow and expand. So I'm going to engage in stuff that's really important, like the fact that researchers are now able to 3D print working blood vessels. And this is an interesting, I hate titles like this because that's not actually what they do. What they're doing is, essentially what happens is when you make like a tissue, right, you grow a tissue, skin's a perfect example. It's a particular type of cell. It's a differentiated cell. And if you've got the cell, it'll divide and divide and divide, and you can grow it. If you give it nutrients, it'll grow and grow. And basically what they do is they take, when they grow skin grafts, they take a nutrient-rich area that's big and flat, and they put cells on it, and then it slowly grows up over that, and then they can peel the skin off and put it on you, and then it'll start to grow and everything. Mm. Well, essentially, what they were running into is they could make blood vessel cells. They could get these cells, and they could mix them up, and they could put them onto something, and they'd start to grow. But the problem is that blood vessels aren't just, it's not like skin, which is a layer of cells. Blood vessels are structural. They require a particular type of structure in order to work, a superstructure beyond what's going on a cellular level. And although that happens naturally as we like develop, you know, just put it in a petri dish, it ain't going to happen. They're not going to grow veins. So what they did was they started to design, they went into a 3D program and they designed the blood vessel structures, and then they 3D printed the blood vessel structures out of this nutrient-rich material. Mm. And then they took the blood cells and they painted the blood cells all over it. And just like with the skin, it grows and multiplies, it becomes thicker as it builds up around these structures. And then at some point they're able to the vessels are then used to move. Imagine being able to walk into a hospital, have a full, I can't remember how they get the stuff out. So basically at that point, you've got all these cells that are all around these blood vessels. Then you got to get these blood vessel structures. You got to get that out, but they do somehow. And then you're left with a blood vessel structure. At that point, you can start pumping blood into it, and you can paint liver cells over it, or heart cells, or whatever. So now you can build a superstructure of an organ with the nutrient delivery system. Build up the nutrient delivery system, and then build the full blown organ around it. And so, in less than a hypothetical way, we could be growing organs relatively quickly. It'll be wicked expensive, wow. But if you're using your own cells, the advantage to all this, of course, is that you don't have to worry about compatibility. You can just, you won't have to get any, what are those things that make your immunosuppressants that normally come along with organ transplants. So this is a big deal. This is cool.
Yeah, definitely. And it starts to call into questions again, you know, what is life and, you know, things like that. But yeah, very helpful. You know, I would feel a lot less bad about, you know, throwing soldiers in the harm's way if you're like, don't worry, we'll just reprint your arm. It's all good.
Right.
And it'll be better. Trust me.
Yeah.
Because that's ultimately where it starts going, right, is you don't just duplicate anymore. You make it even better.
Well, the classic,
I know you had a hard jack. You won't anymore, trust me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this goes back to, what's his name? Dean Kamen, guy who made the Segway. He's currently working on prosthetics, and what he's actually building are Luke Skywalker hands. You know, he's making prosthetics that are highly functional, and his stated goal is he's going to keep making them better and better and better until your buddies in the armies want one instead of their real arms, and then they'll stop. And you're like, well, yeah, you'll stop, but then what about the next guy? Yeah, eventually, you know, it's they made an entire video game based on this idea called is it More Than Human? Oh man. But it was this whole idea of, you know, you're a soldier who keeps getting these genetic and mechanical upgrades until you become like a completely different race than the rest of the people that you're interacting with. And
interesting.
It tries to deal with those moral questions in a cool gun shooty sort of way.
It's a cool future. I mean, it sounds like we're still a ways away from it. Right?
Yeah. Well, see, this is the thing. It's like, yeah, you're probably a long ways away from, you know, you and I getting it. But the reality of it is, like, the way that they're going and the way that they're moving with this stuff, and as your 3D printers get better and our overall understanding of it gets better, you know, I would guess we are well less than a decade away from the first animal trials, means that you could be within a decade to a decade and a half away from the first human trials, which means you're two decades away from rich guys not dying of heart attacks anymore because they can just print themselves a new heart or a new liver or a new lung. And then, you know, how long until that trickles its way down into the affordable health care? Probably never. Or maybe, I don't know. But yeah, imagine being able to walk into a hospital and have a full organ printed, or bioprinted as we call it, with all the cells, proteins, blood vessels in the right place simply by pushing the print button on your computer screen.
Yeah, don't let it be that easy.
Then I say that's a ways off, but you know, man, we're getting pretty sophisticated with this stuff. And to me, the big question is you brought it up with war stuff. Like, you know, how do you manage something like this? I don't know. It's craziness. It's like you get into some crazy ethical questions here. You know, because it's...
Yeah, you do.
You know, it's not just...
I don't know. I like the last paragraph in this one article I read from Pando Daily. It says, if the inevitable destiny of the technological revolutions of the last few centuries was for us to be able to plague God with our own humanity, this frontier could be our final chapter. How much further could you go past this? Once we're 3D printing human organs, how will you ever be impressed by technological innovation again?
Jeez. Well, you know, it's.
I'll find a way.
I was gonna say that goes back to C.K. Lewis's quote of everything's amazing and we all hate it.
Nobody's happy.
And nobody's happy. Yeah, I'm sure we'll be able to normalize it, but it's just like a. Yeah, it's a fascinating question. If you can get to the point where organs are absolutely replaceable, you know, because we've always thought about, like, you know, all of science fiction has sort of looked at organs as a, you know, or the question of like cloning somebody for their organs, right? I'm going to clone myself. I'm going to get a young little Matthew. When my lung goes bad, we're going to harvest young little Matthew's lung. Say sorry, Tucker, and you know, thanks so long. You know, and obviously that seems like a horrifying thing to do, but this is like...
Sounds like a great movie to me.
I know, right?
It's called The Island.
Scarlett Johansson and... what's his name?
Was she the one that was in it?
What?
Was that her that was in it?
Yeah.
Really?
Was it there? Yeah, The Island was ScarJo and Ian McGregor.
I didn't know that was her.
Yeah, man.
Nah, that can't be her.
Okay, we'll Google it.
I know, I'm clicking right now.
The Island.
It was her.
Told you.
Huh.
What was the one with Schwarzenegger that was like stupid but really exciting? It was basically
Total Recall?
The same movie. No. Oh. Total Recall. It was like The Sixth Day. That is it. Yeah, Arnold Schwarzenegger. where basically he's the clone. And but they clone people when they die. Like rich people, they get that's like the football player breaks his neck, so they kill him and clone him.
Yeah.
And they accidentally get too many clones of Schwarzenegger, like rolling around.
I remember that. No, I remember The Island was a movie where we didn't know anything about it. And did we rent it? Oh my gosh, I feel like this is back in the days when you rented movies.
Probably.
And,
Redbox.
2005? Maybe not. Yeah. That might have just been a straight up Netflix thing. I'm trying to think. I was still in school?
Yeah, you were still in school because I was a sophomore, which would have made you a senior.
Yeah. I feel like we borrowed it from someone, but I had no idea what it was. And might have been like, yeah, we were just looking at, oh, The Island. Oh, I like those two actors. Let's watch that. That was as much as I knew about the movie.
All right. And you were caught off guard then.
Oh yeah, no, it was perfect. It was designed for people like me who had never seen it, didn't know anything about it, and I'm like, The Island. All right. You know, so I took everything at face value.
That was super funny.
It was fantastic. I love getting surprised like that. But that's like my story with Fight Club, and and that was for those of you who have not listened. I watched Fight Club. I knew nothing walking into it other than someone was like, "You got to watch it." And I actually remember I was watching it on the school's network because you could tap in other people's computers and media, and so I did that. Totally unsecure if you think about it, how horrible that was that we're all connected. But anyways,
borrowing from the internet.
I was watching that movie, and I was like, oh, I got time between a class or something like that, and I started watching the movie, and I had to go to class, and so I paused the movie right at the scene where he's walking into the bar and like is talking to the guy in the halo. Okay?
Yeah.
You know, he's got the for his neck injury. And like it's just as he looks at him, I pause it because I'm like, oh, good transition, because it was kind of calm. And
God.
I turned it off and was like, went off and, you know, just did my thing. And I never came back to it. And people are like, oh, that movie's amazing. I was like, I don't know. I didn't think it was that great. Whatever. I was like, but in all fairness, I didn't actually finish it. I only got to this one scene, this bar scene. And everyone was like, you're kidding me, right? That's where you paused it? It's like, yeah, why? They're like, you... What? No, yeah, go... Right. Go finish it now. And I was like, why? Okay, sure. Yeah, little did I know, I literally paused it and probably... Yeah.
Moments before they find out that he's Tyler Durden.
Yes. Literally, had I waited 10 more seconds, I would not have been able to stop the movie. And I would have missed whatever it was I was doing. But, yeah, pretty funny. So every once in a while, I get lucky, and I'll walk into a movie with no preconception of what it is and totally get surprised. I did that, too, with The Sixth Sense. I never watched that movie.
I was about to say, well, we're ruining movies. Let's talk about The Sixth Sense.
Yeah. Well, and that was another one where I hadn't heard of it, didn't know what was going on, and I was with a group of friends, and I was like, oh, yeah, I've never seen that movie. Is it good? And they're like, do you know anything about it? I was like, he has six sense? I don't know. What's it about? And they're like, we're watching it. And what I didn't get was, like, I was watching the movie, and everybody else was watching me.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And so I was like, all right. Cool. Yeah, I got done and was like, we have to watch that again. And, yeah.
You'd be like, oh, my goodness.
Yeah, pretty fun. I love it when movies do that.
Hey, yeah, there have been some good ones. I've been having, I love it when they do that. When you get a really good, like, twist. It can be pretty amazing.
That's why I get torn sometimes between watching the trailers and then just doing it.
Yeah, I completely agree.
It's a delicate balance. Just like 3D printing organs will be a delicate balance.
I was gonna try to segue back into this because I think what's interesting about this is that what's kind of weird about this is that it's hard for me to come up with something that's like morally off, some new angle of moral horridness to this. Like, you know, there's the normal morality of healthcare and how we do healthcare and how other countries do healthcare and everything, and you can have that debate all day long. And I think things like this, where they're incredibly expensive but incredibly, you know, healing potential, they kind of heighten that debate. But in and of itself, I can't figure out anything that's morally reprehensible about this that would be like worrisome, you know? Like, does that make sense?
I'm kind of with you. I mean, the argument that I made before is that we already augment our lives. The second we threw on a pair of shoes, we started augmenting our bodies. And, you know, and then we got cars, and heck, I'll go a step further. The second we threw on clothes, leaves, we started augmenting our bodies and changing things. You know, and you sit there and go, well, that's one thing that's on a surface. Okay, we have surgery all the time. And now, granted, that's repairing things that are broken most of the time. But you think about our dad had a hip surgery.
Yeah.
They stuck a piece of metal in his body and said, we're going to call this a new hip. So,
what I think is interesting about this is that that surgery was so invasive. What they do, they now have to suppress his immune system continuously for the rest of his life, putting him in mortal danger, literally, unfortunately, you know, because of that evasive thing. You know, so comparatively, this is your cells. This is you. You know?
Yeah, so I'm like, you know, I don't see an issue with it, and I think that people jump to the conclusion of we'll be playing God too soon. You know, it's a similar deal when we were talking about the self-driving vehicles with Google, and we started imagine a day when you don't actually have truck drivers driving, and trucks and vehicles are all driving themselves, and it's a drone army, essentially, of vehicles. And which is interesting, given that they did just actually, like...
I was going to say, literally, Mercedes just made a giant announcement about their automated truck driving stuff.
Which, the one that I read, they were like, they totally called this thing the wrong name. It should have just been called the Optimus Prime, essentially, because that's what this is. And hey, just tied it in with the movie. They missed marketing opportunity. But anyways, you know, but that was like the thought that we had, and it's clearly going to go a lot slower, and, you know, and the pot will slowly boil, and we will address those, like with the autonomous driving, you know, you address some of those issues of who's at fault, who's covering the insurance, all that stuff. And I feel like it'll be the same with this technology. It's not going to be you know, you submit a print job from home and go to the hospital or the printing lab and pick it up or something like that. You know, it's not going to be that. Not any time in our lifetime. I will go out as far as to say that it won't be that simple, that easy. You'll still have to think about these things. It will still be very expensive. You won't be replacing limbs left and right. It's just, I don't know. I could be wrong. I mean, don't get me wrong. The more we use it, the further the cost will get driven down. Again, using the hip replacement example, there used to be a time when it was like crazy scary, and you know, it was a big deal to get a hip replacement. And now, you know, at least the guy who was working around our dad, he was like, "Yeah, you're one of my 8 scheduled today," or something crazy like that. You know, and there's like, you just get him out, get him in, get him out. It's an easy process. We just do it a lot, and it's. I mean, it's still crazy expensive, and that's why we have insurance, but, you know, that's the way it works.
And a lot of that expense has to do with the fact that there's no relationship between buyer and seller, or there's little financial relationship between those two. And that's true. And that does weird things with the economics of it, but if you can get the economics under control, there's no reason to expect that this would be cost prohibitive forever. You know, I do think you get into weird questions of like you have a heart defect. That's a genetic heart defect. well, we can take your genes, we'll change that one genetic code, we'll reprint you a heart, you now have a heart, or you know, even in the big one that I think we're going to, I think what you'll see first is not full-blown hearts, but you'll see, you'll like, especially with this sort of thing, you'll see heart valves, where yeah. you have a genetic disorder where you have a bad heart valve, and so instead of giving you a pig heart valve, we'll fix your genes, we'll rebuild the one valve with the fixed genes, and then we'll just plug it in and everything will be hunky-dory. You know, like, that one seems unquestionably, oh yeah, we should totally do that. But at the same time, it's, you know, and that is a can of worms, because all of a sudden it's like, you know, these legs like this, you know, you talked about it earlier, and you mentioned we'll get better limbs. It's like, you know, what if you need better muscles or something? I don't know. I guess this goes to your point of, we'll figure this out. We don't have to figure it out today. We'll figure it out as we go. But I don't know. It's weird, because it's just like, I need to force myself to talk about these things and think about them, because it's easy to ignore. But I have a feeling that before I die, I'm going to have to deal with one of these decisions, like, really up close, you know, up front and personal, you know, and if not me, almost certainly a loved one, you know. And at that point, you know, you got to know what you're doing or what you believe.
I'd agree.
I've been openly an advocate of cybernetic enhancements since high school. My friends want to get tattoos. I want to get bionic eyes. that's the sort of body modification I want to do. But it's
all right,
know,
Darth.
Yeah, right. Well, hey, man.
Or Vader.
Luke had it too.
Which I did love. I was watching Clone Wars, and there was a scene where they used an EMP on a bunch of the drone guys. And they used Skywalker's arm went limp when it happened. It's like, perfect. As it should.
Yeah.
And he kind of gave this annoyed look, like, oh, man. Anyways, this next story I thought it's interesting, and I think it will remain in that realm for us because we do not live in the European Union.
Thank goodness.
I know, man. Sounds totally messed up. I'm glad we're not messed up at all. That was sarcasm, just so you know. There's this whole thing called Right to be Forgotten that's been going on that we've largely ignored because, A, it seems political in nature, and, B, we don't live in the European Union. And as you've probably observed on this podcast, if we're not directly involved, it doesn't get a ton of coverage from us. Sorry, Android. But anyways, the ruling has come down and things are starting to happen, and I think it's now stepped itself back into the tech realm. And so I thought it would be worth bringing up. And I'll be honest, I am not the foremost expert on what is going on with this, and it was 4th of July weekend, so I didn't spend all my weekend researching it, so sorry. So there's this. Have you heard of that term, the right to be forgotten?
I have, James.
You have? Okay, good. So essentially, the EU has decided that individuals have the right to be, wait for it, forgotten online. And in a sense where if you have something that is defaming or not true or you don't like, you can say, I wish it to disappear from the internet.
Yeah.
Now, what's fascinating about this is that the EU is kind of tacitly acknowledged that Google is a huge monopoly. They do control 90% of the searches done in the EU.
Holy cow. I didn't
impressive.
Realize that.
Yeah. And so their brilliant idea was to say, we're not going to require the original publisher to take down that web page, because that would be a pain to have to go find all of them and police all of that. Instead, we will just police the gateway to the internet, Google. And so this new rule is, if someone says, we don't like this article, or whatever, this page, because it says something about me that I don't like, Google has to remove it from their search results, essentially.
Jeez.
As, you know, effectively, for 90% of the people accessing the World Wide Web, deleting it.
Right, yeah. Oh, yeah. It re-enters the dark net.
Yeah, so on Marketing Land by Danny Sullivan, who writes a lot, he gave some examples here. There were three stories in October and November of 2010 about a Scottish football referee, Dougie McDonald, who self-admittedly lied about reversing a penalty. That story is now gone. There was a story from 2002 about Paul Baxendale Walker being accused of fraud, but then he was later found not guilty. And so so these are examples where the fraud stories cannot be found anymore, and that referee lying story cannot be found anymore. Another example is an article about how workers in France were decorating their office windows with Post-it notes. Seems kind of random.
Weird.
Seems kind of random.
Yeah.
A 2007 commentary about Stan O'Neill, who's the chairman of Merrill Lynch.
Yeah.
And So that's kind of the idea. So what happens now is, again, Google kind of fought this. We don't want to delete stuff, right of free speech, blah blah blah. They're like, this isn't the USA. It's not July 4th. We don't.
Freedom is free here. It's not free. We're not free. That's what I'm getting at.
Yeah. So, so essentially, Google lost, and the courts are like, you got to take this stuff down. And they've had 70,000 requests so far, which honestly, in internet terms, does not sound like a huge number.
Yeah.
But you know, they're trying to figure out a way to deal with it. So
if they have to do it by hand, that's a lot. If they find a way to automate that, that's not very many at all.
Well, and it sounds like it's somewhere in the middle, is what it sounds like. And there were lots of ways to go about doing this. The way that Google decided to go about doing it was to similar with what they do with YouTube, where if someone claims a copyright, they get rid of the video and then ask questions later. And
yeah.
So this is that same deal. If someone says, "Dude, remove this from the search engine," they remove it and ask questions later. So what's interesting about this is and then what they'll do is they then tell the site owner, they give them a notice that they removed it from their search engine. Just, hey, by the way, we got a request. It's no longer available on our search engine.
Hmm.
Have a good day, essentially.
Hey.
And and so what's happened now is that a bunch of newspaper online publications such as The Guardian and the BBC and The Daily Mail have all started to receive a bunch of these requests, because they're the ones who are writing these articles about people. And they're all going, whoa, 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 freedom of the press. What's going on here? And they're like, there's this fine line between the right to be forgotten versus the public needs to know.
Right.
And you know, again, and just freedom of the press. So there's like these different issues that are floating around. And some people are like, you know, what really happened is that there should be a court that you submit these things to, and then the court decides of that, like, was this freedom of the press? Is this good for the, is this part of the public good? Is this really should be taken down? That kind of stuff. You know, they're like, what do you do? And then what's interesting about this is they're like, and in some cases, this is completely backfiring. Case in point, did you know about that Scottish referee who admittedly lied about reversing a penalty back in 2010?
Yeah. No, I didn't.
Not until Google took it down, and now we all
right.
know about it. We're like, oops, way to backfire. And so they're like...
That literally has a name. It's called the Streisand effect. Where you attempt to get Barbara Streisand tried to get a video taken down from a website, and it made everybody like notice the video, and effectively the became the problem of trying to get the pee out of the pool, as the old saying goes, and all
that
of a sudden
describe the internet.
Every where it was one, it was somewhat embarrassing, but it was nobody knew about it. Suddenly it exploded on the internet because everybody was hearing about them trying to remove this video. Now the video is interesting, people want to watch it. And what went from being not a problem at all became a giant thing. And so that term is literally the Streisand effect.
Yeah, interesting. So it's kind of going through that. Plus, they were like, you know, further bolstering that is you get, you know, some of these companies where it was like the BBC, whenever they get the takedown, they go, hey, everybody, we got the takedown about this particular article here saying that we should take it down. Just thought you should know. Which creates a new link that Google then indexes and now shows up in search results.
Yeah.
So, you know, so they're like, ah, it's total whack-a-mole type of thing. Where, yeah, Google took down that one, but didn't actually solve the problem. And so, yeah, it sounds like it's this total nightmare thing. And then they were saying, like, now whenever you when you type something in, oftentimes it'll say some results may have been removed under data protection law in Europe. Like, sometimes they're removed. Sometimes they're not. It's hard to say. You know, and they're like, and that's the other thing. They're like, Google's like attempting to be transparent, but totally not. They don't say what the reason was for the website to be taken down or removed, forgotten, however you want to say it.
Yeah.
And they don't say who requested it. They just go, oh, it was requested, we took it down. Just so you know.
Right, which is similar to what they do with YouTube.
Yeah, yeah. Very, well, at least they tell you there's a song or something like this. That,
oh yeah,
you know they let you know what it is. Yeah, it's crazy. And some people are saying that essentially Google didn't want this rule to happen. And, you know, it's a pain in the butt, and you know,
yeah,
it's fundamentally not what they, you know, not what they wanted. And so Google's response was, all right, we'll just take this to the logical extreme and see how you like it.
Right.
And, you know, and so they're like, that's kind of what they're doing. It sounds like it's more complicated than that because this all kind of went down on, oh, what day was it? On the 2nd. And then by the 3rd, Google had reversed some of their decisions to delete some British newspaper links. And so, you know, and Google's like, dude, we're still figuring this out. This is weird and crazy, and we don't know. Again, you kind of get the conspiracy theorists who are like, no, they want to get everyone's attention, and now they've got it back. So, you know, we'll see. But
yeah, Google has definitely gotten better at playing that game and throwing around their weight and their, you know, and who they are in order to get done what they want to get done. You know, their patience. They're, you know, good, but it does sound like from what I'm reading and what I've seen, it sounds like, yeah, they might be being a little bit belligerent, but they don't need to be. Like, just the nature of what's going on is such that it's, you know, they can do it just fair, and it's going to cause huge problems because the real dilemma here is that you're trying to censor the internet. That's,
yeah,
and that's the long and short of it, and that's the problem. It's gonna, if you're not, and not only is that, not only can you, you know, do you need to talk about the morality of that, because there's the interesting question of you're blocking the Guardian, you're blocking the New York Times, you're not just blocking, you know, it's not European, it's not the it's not England telling the BBC, hey, don't, you know, the BBC censors themselves about the crown, right? Because you don't have free speech in regard to the royal family, and so they don't publish anything bad. Now that makes sense because it's like the company inside of the government. But if you're doing, like, if you're trying to tell, you're a French, you know, dude trying to get something article from the New York Times off the internet, like, good luck. Like, what jurisdiction do you have there? Which is just a crazy, you know, that whole political discussion is one to be had, but the technological problem there of what the heck are you talking about? Like, what are you trying to do here? And, you know, because it's like like you said, it is absolutely impractical, if not immoral or illegal, to try to allow people to say this shouldn't be on the internet or that should be, you know. Do you have a right to be forgotten? It just doesn't matter. You can't have
the
internet.
Yeah, well, and it's not Google's job to police that. Their job is to index the internet. It's still there. You know, it's a crazy. It sounds crazy. I'm honestly like, happy to be in the U.S. for this one. That's weird.
Right.
I was thinking too, just like musing during political seasons. I totally have a team of people who's like, find any bad article about me, get it taken down. Find any good article about my opponent and get it taken down. That's your job.
Oh, yeah.
Just submit that all day long.
Why wouldn't you? I mean, if you didn't do that, you wouldn't be trying. Like, let's be real, man. That's,
which, again, gets to that censorship, and you're just like, wow, that didn't work out at all how we thought it would.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think this is a classic example of, you know, let's write a law that sounds really good and... You know, at the super danger of getting too political, a lot of governments with large bureaucratic arms, large bureaucracies, the legislation at the top says, we're going to write a bill that says, do this thing, you know, make sure people are happy. And inside the paperwork says, we are going to start a bureaucracy whose job is to make sure that people are happy, and they'll do that by legislating. And so a lot of times these bills get passed without any implementation inside of it. It's just a this will happen decree, and then there's this army of technocrats that are supposed to work with Google to actually get it done, and when it comes time to trying to practically get it done, you realize it can't be done. Like, what are you guys talking about?
And you forget too, like, there's some pretty ingenious people out there that are going to find ways to get around, and the way that a lot of those government systems work is you keep plugging the holes, and you know, anytime someone finds a loophole, you try to shut that one up, and you know, which is really hard to do. The other example I've got is, because it's kind of hilarious. I don't know if you've been talking much to our dad. For you listeners, I know you have not been talking to our dad. but apparently, in his hometown, man, he's getting mentioned a lot this week. They've implemented a new rule that you can no longer use gas leaf blowers in the town.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. And so electric ones are still okay, but the gas ones, not as so much. And he was just kind of laughing and like, whatever, you know, we'll see how that goes. And so like, and it went into effect, it was like in June or something like that. And it was like the next week, was driving downtown. I kid you not. He saw this. He goes, it was a guy. He had an electric leaf blower. Then behind him was the trailer with the generator running, powering the electric leaf blower, making a whole lot more noise than the gas one. And he's like, dude, that's what he's making it work. He's complying with the law. And you're just like, are you serious? Oh, geez. And so it's just that idea, again, you could try to come up with stuff, and people are going to work themselves around, and the way you get off of that is, I mean, you almost guarantee it. Like, 2 months later, you're going to see another law that says no pull-behind generators. You know, they're going to try to word it in such a crazy way that person can't do that. Of course, you're still like, you got to get power from somewhere. You know what I mean? You're just going to be like, can't have an extension cord beyond 50 feet? I don't know. But it's very fascinating how to... From a lawmaker standpoint, how do you try to corral these cats who's like, especially like you think about Google, like their job is to figure out how to do something that wasn't previously possible.
Oh yeah, well, more importantly, and I think even more stunning with Google is their job is to figure out how to find things that are impossible to find.
Yeah,
and you're basically telling them to don't do that. You guys don't understand.
Yeah, they're totally doing the Willy Wonka. No, stop, don't. Right, oh, we couldn't find it. we tried. We can't not find that. Sorry.
Yeah, it's there. What do you want us to do? Jeez Louise. Well, and the biggest joke about all of this is, of course, that the moment you decide to, you know, you make Google not do it anymore, you people who want the freedom to actually see that are just going to go to, I don't know, Bing.com or DuckDuckGo or, you know, any other litany of search engines that are
AOL?
That are based what?
AOL?
Yeah, right. You know, and they'll take they'll go anywhere else that's getting a Google index, and they'll bring it up. Or, you know, the moment you see that there's a takedown on the subjects you want, you're just going to go to Bing, or you're going to go to, you know, wherever. You're going to
Wikipedia.
And you just, or you'll look at, you know, or you'll go to NewYorkTimes.com and you'll search through the NewYorkTimes.com and get the results directly through their search engine, which are oftentimes powered by Google, so that may not work perfectly, but, you know, same principle applies. Like, you sit there and you go, like, this is just not going to work. Like, this is just not going to work. What do you think you people are doing? But I come back, and my problem here is, because, you know, I am somewhat sympathetic, especially, like, with the guy who is who is disproven of fraud. It would be unbelievably frustrating to have your name be, you know, you type your name into Google, and the number one result is some horrible, slander against you that's not true, and having, you know, the first article that says, oh, by the way, turns out that Matthew didn't steal from, you know, such and such, be on the second page of Google. That would be, oh my goodness, I just would be, I would be so frustrating and so hard to take. You know, and the classic quote of, we keep coming back, Mark Twain, with the, you know, a lie will get halfway around the world before the truth has a chance to put its pants on, you know? Like, I get that. You know, that is really frustrating, and I empathize with that, but the way you're trying to go about it is just, it's not only, if, you know, by my American sensibilities, does it just seem a heinous, you know, deprivation of your freedom, it's just not working. Like, and the way you're trying to make it work, it doesn't. Like, you're fighting, you know, you're fighting a cause. I think even if Google, and I come back, I think even if Google really wanted to comply, even if their goal was, you know, to comply in the best possible way, you're still going to be like, it's just not practical. What you're trying to get done didn't work. Because if you really want to know it, now you'll just know, well, I just got a Bing for these particular topics and we'll go somewhere else, you know. And that's the most frustrating part about it, is not only does it at a tremendous cost at Google and deprives you of your freedom, but it doesn't even work. And I don't know. That, you know,
I know.
There's nothing more irritating to me than that. I don't mind you wasting my time and money as long as it has a, you know, a justifiable effect. But
Fair enough. All right. That's enough law. Let's go back to material science.
Okay. Sounds great. So this is awesome. I love magnets. I'm a big magnet fan. Electricity and magnetism. I did my first research project on magnets when I was in middle school. I was a weird kid. But University of Cambridge, they're doing
some... I bought you some magnets once to play with.
You what? Yeah, you're a screw.
Whatever happened to those?
They're at home. They're in my room.
That's
my
cool.
My sister's room.
Like in they're that? Oh, okay.
They're like crazy for listeners. When he said these, like, he got magnets. They're the type of magnets that you can't let them snap together because they're so strong that if they snap together, just like you just let them snap, they'll come together with such speed and force that they'll literally shatter themselves and shoot off like bullets. And if you get them caught, if you get your hand caught between them, they'll crush your hand. They're like super dangerous, which is why they are so exciting. but the University of Cambridge, they did something pretty exciting this week. They have broken a decade-old superconducting record by packing a whopping 17.6 Tesla magnetic field into a golf ball-sized hunk of crystal. And it's the equivalent of to about 3 tons of force, which is just astounding. And they're using a high-temperature superconductor that works at minus 320 degrees Fahrenheit. I love the fact that that's considered high temperature. It's about 140 degrees hotter than what is normally needed for superconductors, so it is quite warm by comparison. They basically, with a superconductor, they're able to get tremendous amounts of a current going within them, since there's no resistance, there's no heat, no problem. And as the current gets higher and higher and higher, it generates a bigger and bigger magnetic force. So they basically got a superconductor to hold the magnetic field, stable magnetic field, to the tune of 17.6 Teslas, which is just absurd. Because you can literally pick up a 3-ton truck with this golf ball size magnetic. It's literally like those movies with the mutants, X-Men, and like the Magneto prison. That's kind of what you have to do with this thing, because it's so ridiculously strong. I mean, it's out of control. And what's cool about it, and the big deal about this, and the reason why like it's worth considering, is because, you know, a 3-ton truck picking it up doesn't seem to have a lot of value. But dig this: what if you were to do like a suspended monorail, where you have magnets of this like power attached to like in a car, and that's just hanging from a monorail. And if you know that the car weighs about 3 tons, and you have one of these little balls hanging there about three that can hold up about 3 tons, and then what you do is you put on either side of it little electromagnets that sort of do the balancing, so it pushes it just far enough, and then as people get on it, it gets heavier, pulls it back up, effectively allowing you to just hover. You could do all sorts of cool engineering projects before that were never practical. And also, it's just awesome. Like, it's just, this is just cool. You could throw this at like a tank and cause damage. Because it'd be like, you know, a grenade. It's awesome. That's so cool.
Magnets.
Magnets. How do they
work? I like the very first comment. Forget the monorails. Think levitating skateboards.
Right. Are you that? See that? Yes, exactly.
That would be pretty crazy. Cool, dude. That's awesome. I like magnets. They did it. Good job, Cambridge.
Congratulations,
university staff. Too. Cool. Another research project was done by someone. I don't know. It just says data. Who's that? Nielsen. Those guys, they research things.
Yes, they do.
Turns out that there's an upper limit for how many apps people will interact with over the course of a month, which in retrospect, it's totally taken advantage of the pigeonhole principle, so duh. But they studied and quantified it. That people use just over a couple dozen apps every month.
That sounds about right.
Yeah, back in, I don't know, whatever date this was, because they didn't add the date. That doesn't help me. 3/2/11, we'll say 2011, because it's 3 bars back from 2013. People use 23, now they're up to 26. The other interesting piece, though, is that in terms of number of minutes used, it's gone from 18 minutes up to 30 minutes per person. So even though the amount of time you've spent on your smartphone has significantly increased, the number of apps you use has not, which just means you're using the apps you have more. This would probably be an interesting thing to also compare against television, because I think similar stats would apply with channels.
Yeah, I completely agree. I was about to say, I was like, this is probably not going to be surprising to anybody, but on a cursory count, I use significantly more than the average, and like every day, which it actually got me kind of yelled at once in an Apple store, because they went through my open apps. He's like, "What are you doing to this phone? Like, seriously, close the apps. What are you doing? You're gonna ruin this phone." He was like shocked. That's interesting. That's interesting that. Yeah, I mean, like, you only have a certain brain space for, you know, apps. What's really interesting about this, right, is, you know, originally Apple didn't want to give you infinite number of pages. They wanted to give you a small number of slots for apps. And it was, you know, part of it was just for performance reasons. But I think they were at least emotionally aware of the very fact that we were talking about, which is you only have so much brain space for all your different applications. And, you know, and there's a real temptation to have the proliferation of 1,000 apps, you know, but you're only going to use 10 or 12 of them or 20 of them or whatever the number is.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's very true. They were saying also that it's very possible that the apps can change month to month, you know, because just looking at the number of apps. Just for your edification, the number one category, which I think is a very broad category, is search portals and social. Again, those feel very broad to me.
I was going to say, so basically Facebook, Google, search portal, and social.
Yeah.
So YouTube, Google, and Facebook, you're going to all clump into
one category.
I think
YouTube falls under the entertainment category, I believe, would be my guess.
Okay.
Which is tied with search portals and social at about 10 and a half minutes each. Communication is the next one. So,
how do you clump search and social together? Just because they have an S? Those are like significantly different applications.
I don't know. I don't know. Well, and somehow commerce and shopping is different as well.
What?
I don't know. Productivity and tools, 2 minutes. Big deal. Finance gets half. No, I'm sorry. It's 2 hours, 16 minutes. I've been totally off on all this. These are 10 hours a month. We're talking month, not minutes.
Yeah. Okay.
There you go. So finance is 35 minutes. Yes, yes, yes. Photography is an hour a month. That must be Instagram falls into photography, not communication, right? I wonder what Snapchat is.
Yeah, right.
It's complicated. Family and lifestyle. I have no idea what a family and lifestyle app is, which is an hour and 16 minutes. Family and lifestyle. That's not social. That's not travel, not photography, not communication.
This is a stupid way to break up your apps, James. That's just, what this is.
What the... Huh. And in gaming, I would imagine it falls under entertainment. I don't know what family and lifestyle is, honestly. Okay, let's see here. Was there any other interesting stuff? No, the interesting thing, honestly, was it caps out at about 24 apps. That's the interesting thing. Oh, they did break it up by average age. That was kind of interesting, I guess. Not surprisingly, how about this? They found that older smartphone owners, ages 25 to 44.
We were so old.
I know, I was like, older, huh? All right. We're averaging 29 per month. Yeah. However, younger users, which is 13 to 24, they spend the most time, which is 37 hours. So we use the most apps, but the younger ones spend the most time, 37 hours, 6 minutes a month doing stuff, but they use less apps.
I hate to admit this, but I probably rightfully fit in the older category. That's not comfortable for me at all.
Yeah, there you go. And then the 55 plus, they use 22 apps per month and spend more than 21 hours.
Wow.
So there you go.
That's crazy.
Yeah, so the question is no longer how do you just get installed, but how do you become one of those 24 apps that gets used regularly? Or monthly, at least. Been interesting. Little factoid for you for this 4th of July.
It's good to keep in mind. So did you see the new Apple parenting commercial?
I did, actually.
What'd you think of it?
I liked it.
Yeah, it's kind of sweet. One of the things that's really fascinating about it, though, is what I thought was worth pointing out. So for those of you who haven't seen the commercial, why not? Watch more TV. go to furloughbros.com, click on the link. It'll be there. Apple's iPhone 5S TV ad about parenthood. And basically is, you know, in classic Apple fashion, it shows a number of quick circumstances with their device being used in a heartwarming and humanitarian way with, you know, pleasant music overlay. It's, you know, they got a stylist what they do. And this one's particularly showing off apps. and they're showing off kids, you know, in all sorts of situations. But what was really interesting is that this is all about, you know, this thing is titled Parenthood, right? So it's about showing, you know, adults with young children and them interacting. And it's sort of like, you know, it's supposed to make you feel like, yeah, if I've got a phone, it can help me teach my kid and it can help make my life better and my kid's life better, which is what their commercials are always about, improving the human experience, right? Where technology meets humanities. And they're showing that in a very interesting way. But a number of their examples are kind of brilliant, because there's one scene where there's a dude, he's sitting on a couch and he's got this tiny little baby falling asleep on his stomach, and he pulls his phone up and he like very carefully hits a button on the phone, and all of a sudden the light
lamp.
The lamp, the couch side lamp that's out of reach, turns off. Obviously showing off one of the cool functionalities of, you know, a connected home. And there are a couple of examples like that. And what people have been pointing out is that this is brilliant, because where like Samsung and other companies will try to like convince you that, you know, your kids' lives are important and stuff, and they'll do it in a really ham-handed way, this is just like, yeah, this is almost overly sweet. But it's really showing off a whole suite of different home connected stuff, and it actually harkens back to their last one, their health one, where they were showing off all the different devices, and they've not shown off HomeKit or HealthKit in practice. They haven't shown the apps, they haven't shown their main like hub of what they're doing, but what they're showing off is the potential of the platform, and they're getting people excited and comfortable with it. And I don't know, I just, you know, say what you will about Apple, but I love their ads. They just do such a great job of like of making a case for this new technology and doing it in a way that's like really respectful. It's encouraging. It's exciting, and it's just super classy. And Samsung doesn't normally do that. Kind of annoying, but. It gets me excited for what's coming down the ballpark in the next year or two, and makes me desperate to get some light bulbs that I can turn off with my phone. Just hard to justify the dollars.
I understand.
Actually, you want to know the biggest reason why I'm not doing it right now?
Sure.
Is because I got a fan in my room that acts as my main light fixture, and for the light bulbs are not standard sockets. They're a smaller size socket. So you're like Philip Hughes and stuff, you're like really cool LED light bulbs, don't fit in it, which is super annoying. And I don't know how to deal with it, because I'm like, I actually have it on more than one occasion, walked into the store and said, I'm getting it today, only to realize, you know what, this isn't going to work in my room, so I'm not getting it today, which bums me out quite a bit.
I'm sorry.
But, yeah, I'll survive.
But what technology you are on top of are digital books with your Paperwhite.
Yeah.
And you're not alone. The scale has tipped. The teeter-totter has passed the fulcrum. A majority of book sales are now digital book sales in the United States.
Which really is the only logical way for it to be.
But I'm just saying, it has now happened.
Yeah, I mean, I love books, and I hopefully will own books and bookshelves from an artisan workmanship sort of way. But why in the world would you pick up an entire giant piece of paper printed on dead trees when you can carry 7,000 books with you on a tiny little digital reader that will last forever, like all the time? I just like. If you're serious about books at all, I mean, at all, having real books is stupid, ironically. I'm almost surprised it took as long as it did. I guess not, because, you know, it took me a while to get around to actually picking up an e-reader, so I suppose I can't judge the rest of humanity for taking their time, too, but... It's not surprising at all. It does. It does. I do get really curious about the question, though. What happens to book manufacturing? You know, because that's gonna that there's gonna be a real impact to it. But I feel like, you know, does it go the way of scrolls? I guess that's what how you have to think about it, right? Like, we used to print everything on scrolls, and we don't do that anymore. Why? Because books made more sense. And then we used to, you know, print everything on, you know, on certain types of books, and there used to be incredible craftsmanships and artisan skills involved in it, because it was all done by hand. And then Gutenberg came along, and we got better paper, and we got better printing techniques, and we got better this, and we got better that. And before you know it, you know, you've fundamentally changed what a book is, even though, or not fundamentally changed, but you've, from a very practical perspective, you know, when we walk into a bookstore and pick up a copy of some sci-fi novel paperback, yeah, it's a distance relative to, you know, some of the beautiful Bibles that were made back in, you know, the 1100s, but they're not the same thing. They're just not. And so I guess what I'm emotionally dealing with, and what we as a humanity will have to emotionally deal with, is just paperback books are going to go away. Paper books are going to go away. They have to. It's weird. They're going to be an anachronism.
Yeah. True.
Speaking of anachronisms, somebody decided to see the writing on the wall for their industry and jump onto the future. Apple has officially hired Tag Heuer sales director. Tag Heuer is a luxury watch company. And what's this dude's name? Apple. I have no idea. Doesn't matter. Basically, he's the sales director for a luxury
Biver?
Watch brand. That's, what?
Biver?
Biver. I think, yes. I think that's right. Claude Biver.
Oh, no.
No?
I don't know.
Doesn't matter. Point is, it really wouldn't make much sense for Apple to be buying or to be hiring a guy like this without some sort of a luxury watch type thing to come along with it. I think it's interesting that they really seem to be doubling down on the idea that they are a luxury company. In that they're going, you know, they're trying to bring in the luxury watch sales guys. They've got a luxury brand person heading up their stores. You know, they seem to be going back to, hey, we've gotten a little bit far off of our roots on this, and we want to redefine ourselves, reestablish ourselves as a luxury brand. And they're making sure that the people, the tastemakers in their company are of that pedigree. Which is interesting, but it's, you know, every once in a while nowadays you'll see articles that are be like, no, the Apple Watch isn't coming. It's definitely not coming. And then Apple does something like this. You're like, it's definitely coming. It's just a matter of time. Goodness gracious. Like, can we just get it done? I'm so sick of the rumors, James. I'm so ready for it just to be here. It drives me crazy.
I can tell. That's funny. This is not a rumor. This was written by robots, actually. Well, not yet, but they will be. Pretty soon, the AP is going to start using automated technology, a.k.a. robots, to deliver stories from quarterly earnings.
That seems reasonable.
Yeah, well, what's interesting is they're like, you know, the data's all pretty standard. It's all the same. Like, and we have flesh and blood humans doing it right now, and we can do about 300 a year. Like, and with by automating this whole process, we'll be able to do 4,400 a year, and then employ those writers to do actual analysis on the most interesting ones. Interesting. So they don't have to worry about doing the boring regurgitation part of it.
That's really cool. And how I understand this technology working is it's sort of like how they do translating nowadays, where you get these translating programs that do the cursory first take. You know, they go through and they basically they read it and they translate it using the, you know, the most sophisticated translated technology we have in the world, and they get about 80% right. And then the translator, the human person, goes in and makes sure all your idioms are proper and and there's no, you know, real weird wording things. They basically, you know, spell check it. And it sounds like that's kind of why there is a limitation at all on how many they can do, because it's, you know, these people actually have to go and make sure that they're right, which means that they have to comprehend the actual report, and they have to comprehend and check the, you know, the article that's going out. But that's really exciting. I mean,
sorry, dude, that last 15 seconds just got cut off.
Last year, there's been more in the classic areas. It's,
oh.
Okay. So basically, I was just saying that, you know, can you hear me?
Yes.
James?
I can hear you.
Okay. Weird. There's like a super big lag. There's like a super big lag now. Do you have Comcast finally?
Yeah, it's my wife's fault. Want me to talk to her real quick?
Well, you know, we got another 10 minutes. It's
okay.
But, yeah, so, I don't know. I don't know what I was saying. I'm not sure it matters. I sort of lost interest in my own topic. What was I saying? Oh, my goodness. What were we even talking about? I'm so distracted. The big thing I was going to say is I know that some people got weirded out when they realized that, like, reporters are reporting, you know, that some of these reports are written by robots. I know the earthquakes are the classic because they're so simple. Where was the earthquake? What was the magnitude? You know, like, you're just basic, hey, there was an earthquake. But seriously, like, why would you have people write these if you could avoid it? Passing them off as human writers, I would say, is probably not super wise, but the idea that news articles like this can be written like that and you're getting that news out there, that just seems like, you know, that just seems smart. it's cool. It's exciting to see that it's going that way. And I think, you know, figuring out how to keep newspapers and news reporters relevant and financially viable in the future is incredibly important. And I'm glad that, you know, glad that they're taking these strides to try to achieve that goal, you know. Cool.
It is cool. It is cool. Soon we'll be automating all of this.
Yes, and then no. We can take it easy on Sundays.
Yeah. So that's an interesting experiment. Maybe later.
Yeah.
I feel like that would take more effort than it's worth to set up.
Way more effort than it's worth.
How fascinating would that be, though, if you, like, you plug in a bunch of articles and then you literally have some sort of system that reads them. You just go, yeah, it's a podcast. We got 2 hours of articles being read to you. It's all good.
That sounds really boring.
I don't know. Depends on your articles. Well, and the value add is the curation. It's an audiobook of curated tech articles.
Exactly. That's what we're all about.
Interesting. Interesting indeed. All right, man. Happy 4th of July.
Yeah, happy 4th of July to you, too.
Unlike the EU, we have freedom of speech. We can say whatever we want. We get to talk about tech.
Exactly. Freedom ain't free.
Though I would consider it a huge win if one of our podcasts got taken down, I think.
Oh, yeah. That'd be great.
That would be fantastic, actually. But, oh, well. Cool, man. Thanks for getting back in time. Appreciate you driving a crazy number of hours to make that happen.
Hey, it was my pleasure.
Yeah. So, everybody else, thank you for joining us. My name is James Furlow, and again, my freedom-loving brother is Matthew Furlow. And so we will talk next time.